Hello again, fellow basement dwellers. This is your good friend Patrick O'Dowd. Welcome you once again to another edition of Bandwagon Nerds. A lot's happened in the last week, and I'm not here by myself as usual. We got the whole gang. No football games to get in the way of anything. For the rest of the season now, we don't have to worry about anything until preseason, do we? Do we, Rick?
Not even preseason. Not until September. I don't watch preseason.
Yeah, you don't speculate for hours over who may or may not be the starting left guard for the New Orleans Saints, who's going to make the cut as the long snapper.
Too many times the Patriots have gone 0-4 and then demolished and won the Super Bowl. So
There is that. So that voice you are hearing is Big Rick himself. How do you pronounce your last name? That's why I don't say it.
It's French. It's Lachney.
Lachney.
Lashne.
Dude, that's like saying Joe Dirt is pronounced Dirte. Stop it, Rick.
And of course, everybody, that is our other co-host, Mr. Dave Ungar, coming to us. How you doing, Dave?
I'm pretty good, man. How are you guys doing?
Oh, it's been a busy week. Busy week.
I'm thrilled that Rick is here. I mean, after the debacle last weekend, I'm really happy that Rick is here. I thought he'd still be crying.
He might be.
I got back on my feet a couple days ago. So,
attaboy. Way to pick yourself up.
I tell you what hurts more than anything is seeing the team that beat you just get totally demolished the next week. And it's like that team beat us. They're playing like ass. But, you know, I don't even want to talk about it.
See,
I want to talk some nerd stuff today.
Well, but I do want to say, as my backup team has always been the 49ers. And, well, and here's the thing. Joe Montana to Jerry Rice, like, you can't beat that combination. Ronnie Lott back just obliterating people before he went to the Raiders. Great stuff. Golly.
He might be the best tackler since Joe Montana. Joe Montana's a quarterback, you idiot.
I said Joe Montana.
Anyway. So I'm really excited about this episode. This is part of what I've decided to call the 80s Project, Part 1. So, folks, if you remember from last week on the podcast, we had started talking about Rick's decided lack of knowledge of new movies from the 80s and really centered around the movie Ghostbusters and his inability to know that Ghostbusters is one word. And that spawned into an episode today where we decided to put together our list, and we're going to categorize various movies of the 80s over the next few weeks, talking about various genres. Today we're going to do the top 10 sci-fi movies of the 80s based on our opinions. And I'm really excited. I had a lot of fun with this list. You guys gave me a hard time because I put my list together in, what, like 5 minutes after the show?
Not even. That's maybe a minute to a minute and a half. I don't think we were finished with the Skype call, Patrick. And you're like, all right, here's my list.
I know what I like. What? I mean, I know what I like. And I was really excited to do it. I'm really excited to do all these lists as we go through some categories throughout the next few weeks until we get into probably March when we start to get into the movie season. You know, we'll talk about Birds of Prey. And we're going to talk about Birds of Prey a little bit later today because we're going to do, in addition to what the 80s Project, we're also going to talk about our new show that we've started to watch and evaluate episode by episode. We're going to talk about The Witcher. We're also going to talk a little bit of Trailer Park. We're going to go to the Trailer Park and talk about a couple of trailers that dropped this week. One we talked about on last week's show, questioning whether or not it would actually show up. And then the other one was just a show that we talked, the movie that we talked about in general, Birds of Prey. So what do you think, fellas? You want to get into it?
Let's do it, man.
Yeah.
We have a lot to cover today, actually.
So. Yeah, we'll see if we actually hit the hour. I'm going to try to keep us on point. But before we do that, I do want to just mention you are listening to Bandwagon Nerds. We are on thechairshot.com, the Chairshot Radio Network. And now that I've done that little bit, we're going to start talking about The Witcher because that was the show. We wrapped up The Mandalorian. Felt like we put a nice little bow on that. And so we are doing something a little bit different this time, folks. Most of you binge watchers out there have probably already seen every episode of The Witcher, but none of the three of us had watched an episode going into last week's show. So I thought it would be fun with the three of us also being fairly cold on our knowledge of The Witcher, to watch a show that we don't know a whole heck of a lot about and to just really react to this phenomena, I think is the best way to describe it, is it was the most streamed show like ever on Netflix. If I remember reading the, at least for the month of January or whenever it dropped.
No, it took most streamed. It not only surpassed the Stranger Things, but it surpassed Mandalorian pretty quick too.
It has a big deal, and we added to those numbers. And so, to start, I guess, what are our initial thoughts watching this first episode? This is really sort of an establishing the tone of the show, kind of a world building sort of thing. So I don't know that we got a whole heck of a lot out of it other than kind of the background and the setup.
I can't. I'll go first because I kind of dozed off once or twice. I've been up since 4. I went to the gym, but I didn't doze off because it was boring. I was tired. But as soon as it ended, I wanted to start watching the second episode because it not only piqued my interest, but I was like, all right, well, we know who the girl in the woods is. And now I need to figure out how The Witcher is getting incorporated and what's going on. So caught my attention. It finished strong. I want to say the last 20 minutes finished really strong, and it made me want to go watch the second episode.
Yeah, I thought the first episode was really, really good. I mean, there's a lot to digest. Just a lot of stuff going on. I mean, you've got The Witcher battling the whatever that thing was at the beginning, which was a fun, the only real monster. I mean, it's hard to digest because there's just so much shit going on in that show. I mean, you've got the parallel storylines running. You've got Geralt, the Witcher, Henry Cavill, who just basically said, oh, you guys think I can't act? Hold my beer. You know, let me show you what I can do. That sort of thing. You got, the stuff going on back with the kingdom. You got battlefields. It felt a lot like Game of Thrones in a lot of places. But in a different, you know, more fantasy driven universe, at least until the dragons show up in Game of Thrones, that sort of thing. But I think the girl in the woods, the thing that's intriguing about her, it's like, okay, is that Black Canary? Because she's got the sonic scream, just like Black Canary has. and you could tell, okay, they're after her because she's got this power. Her and the Witcher are obviously linked to each other. And I mean, a lot to digest, but boy, it was really good. It kept my interest, and I felt like Rick. I said, okay, I want to jump into episode 2. I want to see what happens next. I've heard, Patrick, that they've got 7 seasons of this lined up. Have you heard anything like that?
I saw that. I was going to ask Patrick, how accurate is that from what you've been reading?
I'm really embarrassed to admit I haven't really read anything about the show.
David took 8 episodes to stump Patrick.
I am truly going into this cold, completely cold. I've never read the books. When I bought my PlayStation 4, The Witcher 3 came with it. And I remember looking at it and being like, this looks like a really cool game. I'd like to play this. But I have a child.
Yeah.
And there's some themes. And so finding time to play it has been challenging. It's the same reason why, I mean, here's the deal. The only games that get played on my PlayStation 4 during the day, Lego adventure games, like Lego Marvel Super Heroes, Lego Harry Potter, like Lego Star Wars. Those are the games that get played in the O'Dowd household during daylight hours. And so then when old man O'Dowd is ready to saunter down to play some video games at 8 o'clock and then 9:15 hits and I'm like, too many cinematic cutscenes and I'm ready to go to bed. I just never opened it, never played it. So, yeah, I don't know. I will have to go and like do some of my own reading about how many seasons. I know that they're taking this pretty seriously. For Netflix to have a show go 7 seasons is unheard of.
The other thing I heard is around episode 4, people who watch the show got genuinely confused. That's what I've heard about. So I think we should probably prepare ourselves going into like episode 4 or 5. There are people like online on my Facebook group, you know, or Facebook page who are nerds like me. And they're like, I've got no idea what the hell is going on. And I mean, that can be a little bit frightening for people like us who are going in completely cold. It's like, okay, where are they diverting off into, but it could be just world building. But anyway, I mean, that's just something I think, you know, moving forward. Not right. This is not a spoiler free podcast, but amongst the three of us, we're trying to keep things, you know, somewhat spoiler free. But that's just what I've heard about. I think it's episode 4.
I'm waiting very patiently for the time when the three of us watch an episode that we need to talk about before we talk about it on the show. Because from what I've heard and what you're talking about, Dave, sounds like there's a lot of time jumps, a lot of exposition that explains the present, and that the way that those time jumps are edited into the show, it's not always clear that you're in the past or the present or where you are in kind of relation to everything else. So it's very, very challenging to kind of stay on top of that, even if you are a fan of the show, of the program, to try and keep up. So very, very much interested. What I did appreciate about this episode, and we talked about world building, very much what they tried to do is give you the tenor of the show and sort of what we're going to be looking at Geralt facing as he kind of embarks on this quest that even he's not entirely sure what he needs to do. What we do know is that there is an inherent mistrust of witchers, that they're extraordinarily rare. And yet at the same time, there's a need for them or a question for them in terms of being both heroes and villains and really where that lies. And so I'm intrigued to see where they carry that story and where it takes as we head into episode 2 all the way through. How many is it? 8 episodes in the season?
I think they're up
like
to
that?
8, something like that. What's interesting is he calls himself a mutant. So right off the bat, you're thinking, okay, the Witcher, he's obviously, or well, I don't know how obvious it is, but he doesn't seem to be, he looks human, right. But he probably is not. Is he like, you know, when they say mutant, I think X-Men, you know, is he something like that? So it's fascinating to see, okay, how are these two primary characters that got introduced in episode 1, how do they relate to each other? How do they find each other?
And how is that journey going to take place for that girl? How does that journey take place for the Witcher?
And the Witcher, now, Witcher was absolutely that fight at the end where he just takes down just badass as could be. And then when he fights, I forget the girl's name. It starts with an L. I forget.
I know.
Yeah, but
it starts with an A.
No, it started with an L, wasn't it?
It starts with an A.
The girl he fights at the end?
Yes, he kills. Right, I'm saying it's spoiler free podcast.
All right, never mind. The girl he fights at the end, you know. And that was a good fight.
It's amateur hour here at Bandwagon.
Anyway, at any point during the show, did y'all wonder if they were going back in time between the war and what was currently happening with The Witcher, or were y'all thinking it was happening at the same time? Like, I didn't know it was the same time until the princess got away, and I said, "All right, I bet you that's the girl in the woods."
To me, it was pretty clear that war was taking place in the past, that it was building towards something. But that was me. That was one time jump, though. I'm looking forward to like the next 20.
Yeah, I thought they were going simultaneously. It seemed that way. They didn't seem to be jumping around too much.
Right. So,
Patrick, all right, you know how to work your computer?
It's freaking tabs, and I like having my phone and that computer off. Like, I have... Right now, I have 3 devices in front of me. So to pull the curtain back while we record, I'm actually an on-call staff member right now taking texts from people who work for me while at the same time having a small device off here because I like to have my Skype window up with both of your faces as well as the rundown. And then I got Google.
Patrick, just make sure you give your actual students a real homework assignment, not like Rick. You know, we don't want to confuse things.
Well, you know, if I were a teacher, I would do that, but I don't have to do that. I just got to tell them who deserves to get keys or not to their room. That's my job. So anyway, so I think there's a lot more to come. I think that this was very much a foundational thing. It was building the mythos of The Witcher, giving you a sense of the environment that there are creatures of all sorts all around. It's clear that there are some.
We're both wrong. It starts with an R.
Right.
Renfrey.
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 Right. But, you know, very much a world building thing. leading into kind of introducing some of the who the big bads might be, who a bad may be, not necessarily the big bad, but one. You see the environment within villages and towns that the Witcher walks into, and that there is this bigger epic and scope story that is percolating but hasn't come to fruition yet. I'm excited to see where this show goes.
Oh, absolutely. It's going to be fun.
Excellent. Will be.
So any final thoughts about this before we move on? And we're going to talk about next episode two next week.
No, just
Looking forward to it. I'm just looking forward to it. Nice cliffhanger at the end.
That's right. And that's the hallmark of a good show. And one of the things I think is an interesting challenge when you put everything out on streaming right away to binge is you don't necessarily have to do that when you know somebody, when you know the audience is probably going to just keep going to the next one, to the next one, to the next one. So yeah, sit right there with you. Very excited to see what happens. Looking forward to talking about this over the next eight weeks or so, with one break, as I will be in Vegas for one of those episodes. So we won't talk about it then.
Well,
you can roll your eyes all you want
I'm not rolling my eyes. I'm just saying we'll skip that week. Or can we watch the episode anyway, though, if Rick and I get desperate for something to do?
I mean, yeah, if you really want to. But I figure we'll give Rick a solid homework assignment for the episode, you know, for the recording prior, so that we can just confuse the shit out.
Gotta give Rick a week off here and there.
Well, I figure with the 80s project, yeah, Rick's going to have quite a lot of homework within the 80s project if we sell our lists the way that I think we will. So let's move in. This week there were a couple of trailers that dropped that we talked about. Now, Dave, I know you were really excited about one. And we're going to talk about that one second because I think there's more to say there.
Patrick, are we going to the trailer park? Is that where we're going?
We are going to the trailer
park. All right.
Nice attempt at an accent there. I don't know what was happening. So.
I grew up in the South, man. So
he's trying to sound like this. Guys, we're going to the trailer park. Everybody load up and let's go.
That's your natural voice, though, Rick.
That is my natural.
Never meaning no harm. Anyway. So we talked about this last week on the show. We mentioned that allegedly on January 6th that a trailer for the long anticipated New Mutants movie was going to drop. And lo and behold.
Was this the one y'all were talking about that has been postponed numerous times?
Yes.
Yes.
Okay, go ahead.
But lo and behold, it happened. They came through, and we did indeed get a New Mutants trailer. And one, if you'd watched the previous trailer, it didn't feel all that different from the previous trailer. So no. I don't know whether to be encouraged or concerned, but at least it didn't feel different.
I mean, it looks like maybe it won't be quite the train wreck we were fearful of. It still could be. I mean, it still just could be an amalgamation of everything that they've tried for the past 3 years. But they do seem, you know, they want to introduce a horror element to things. I mean, a lot of stuff going on with like Marvel this week, things that I've heard that I wanted to ask you about. But I'll hold that until after we get done talking New Mutants. But before we talk about the other trailer, there's some stuff I did want to pose out to you guys that I'd heard. I don't know how much you guys have heard, but I'll defer.
Oh,
for
you're
now.
Talking about the turmoil in the MCU.
Yes.
Everybody panicking over the MCU.
Everybody's panicked.
Yeah, we can talk about that in a second, because I do want to talk about this New Mutants trailer. And I will say that this trailer, and maybe it's just I'm starved for an exciting take on the X-Men or on the X-Men franchise. But this trailer piqued my interest. This trailer had me being like, you know, this could be something fun to watch. Mm-hmm. And one that I won't take my kid to go see right away.
No.
Because it looks creepy. Like the atmosphere in that trailer, and it's basically, you know, kids in an asylum, for lack of a better way to describe it. It's really some heavy horror elements to it, and right. The use of sound in that trailer,
right?
Terrific.
Yeah, Marvel is not all, you know, unicorns and everything's flowery. And I mean, when you actually deal with the Marvel comics, there are some very, very dark corners of the Marvel universe. Morbius, you know, is supposedly coming out in a few months. There's been some stuff released about that. That's a vampire. So, I mean, you know, that's a dark corner of the Marvel universe. So stupid, they're trying
man. To. Oh, I mean, sorry.
They're trying to introduce, you know, some of the darker elements. I don't think they want to go like DC dark, but they're trying to introduce some of the darker elements of the Marvel universe because it creates options. And right now, you know, Marvel just seems to, you know, almost have too many irons in the fire a little bit. It's kind of going in that direction, but it's a cool trailer. It looked like you say, Patrick, it piqued my interest. I want to go see it. I want to see what happens.
I clicked the link y'all put and I must've missed because I watched it twice. And yep. I noticed this the second time, the Marvel where it says Marvel at the right. beginning of the trailer. I missed it the first time and about 3/4 of the way through the trailer, I said, this ain't no Marvel show. This legit looked like a horror movie that yep. Hollywood has been putting out. I said, there's right. no way this, I said, I'm watching the wrong trailer. So I restarted it with like 40 seconds left. And then I saw the Marvel logo, but it's definitely nothing like I've seen with Marvel, and I'm going to go see it regardless. But I just hope, like Patrick said, the trailer, I hope it's not one of those movies where the best parts of the movie is everything you've seen in the trailer and everything else is shit.
You mean like you mean like Last Jedi was, right? Sorry, Patrick. No, sorry.
You mean the Rise of Skywalker or Phantom Menace, the. Okay. Everybody knows that the Phantom Menace trailer looked amazeballs, and then y'all went and saw the Phantom Menace. And you went, this is awful. But enough about that. Yeah, you mentioned Marvel and concerns. One of the things that I have read somewhere, and don't quote me on the source because I don't remember where I saw it, is that allegedly the New Mutants may tie into the MCU. That may be one of the few adjustments that was made. That this could be the entrance of of an X-Men franchise to kind of gateway the X-Men into the MCU.
Great.
But and if that's the case, again, color me interested.
Yeah, great. Do it. I mean, if they can figure out a way to tie all that together, then fantastic.
But there's all kinds of stuff you mentioned that has been floating around about the MCU this week, and some of the ones that I've read, I think the big news is that Doctor Strange and the Multiverse of Madness, the director and Marvel have parted ways.
Yep.
Over quote Whoa. Creative differences.
Wait, what?
Yeah, so the director of the upcoming Doctor Strange movie and Marvel Parted Ways, basically because of alleged creative differences, which most people are interpreting as loosening the horror elements that he wanted to introduce into the Doctor Strange movie and kind of lightening it up a little bit. The other speculation that I've heard about this is that it may also lead to a reduced connection between the Scarlet Witch and that movie, that her role may not be as prevalent, and that may be partially why WandaVision has been moved up. Some people are questioning why WandaVision was moved up as another big sort of red flag. The other rumor, but I haven't seen a release, was about the Hawkeye series, that the Hawkeye series may no longer be being a series. And maybe something all its own entirely different. And so there's a lot of hand-wringing over what this all means. And I think it's interesting when we immediately jump to Marvel's, oh, and the James Gunn thing. People bring up the James Gunn thing, which was a bad decision on Disney's part, but eventually got made right, so I'll move on. And the Spider-Man thing, which was just a money grab and people fighting over cash and eventually made right. So there's a lot of hand-wringing over what does this all mean for this next phase? What's going to happen? And I don't know. I don't know that it means anything, to be honest, because over 22, again, I'm going to go back to the history has shown over 22 movies, Marvel's found a way. When a director wasn't working out well in, oh, say, the Ant-Man movies, they still found a solid director to put together a movie that fit in with the MCU and wasn't a terrible movie.
So Ant-Man 1 and 2 had different directors?
Ant-Man's original director for the original Ant-Man movie, I think, was Edgar Wright, and got pulled, and they parted ways within the project. But Ant-Man still happened. There's, you know, Jon Favreau was on tap to keep going with Iron Man until Iron Man 2 came out, and he really took the brunt of that movie's poor performance and being a big commercial. Thor's gone through multiple directors before it found its guy. So I'm not entirely buying it that Marvel's gonna just collapse into a smoldering heap and be terrible.
No, they're going to be just fine. I mean, it's just a little bit of turmoil, inner stuff. I mean, they people would like to have Marvel's problems. Oh, we can't decide how to spend all these millions of dollars.
They're printing money.
Yeah, I'd heard the same thing about the Doctor Strange. I'd heard it was an amicable split that they just couldn't agree on on the direction that Doctor Strange 2 should go, and so that was the end of that. I mean, the question now is, does it delay the release of the movie to the point that it kind of screws up the timeline? Because I figure Doctor Strange 2 is going to be a really big movie in phase 4.
I guess it's
phase 4-ish, that sort of thing. Right. So, hopefully it doesn't result in the delay of the whole thing, because that would not be cool.
But,
what creative differences do you think? You were saying, I know you mentioned it. Can you elaborate a little bit more on what you think?
I think like Patrick said, they wanted to make it darker, maybe kind of use some of the New Mutants elements, you know, kind of that more horror-ish element to the thing. And it sounds like, from what I understand, Disney wasn't quite ready to commit to that sort of level of,
But why would they commit to allow the mutants to have it?
But that's not a Disney. That's a Sony thing, isn't it?
Yeah, that's the thing. It's Fox. Fox had the X-Men. It was under the Fox property when Fox made it.
So even though Disney owns Marvel, it's one of those things with the Hulk right now. They own Marvel, but they don't own the rights to Hulk completely.
Sort of. So the X-Men have come back to Disney. But New Mutants was made well before...
Oh, okay.
Disney took their properties back. That's why we're slowly talking about, when the Disney-Fox merger, whatever you want to call it, thing happened, those characters came back in a way that is not the same for properties, say, owned by Sony, which is why there was a big fight between Disney and Sony over the use of Spider-Man. Because Sony still, at the end of the day, still has an interest and a stake in Spider-Man and Spider-Man films. Hence, you get Venom and you try to make a Spider-Man movie without Spider-Man because you're stupid.
Hey, I did hear, did you hear that they worked out a deal to get the rights to Hulk? I'd read something about that earlier in the week.
I missed it if it did. I'll be honest. This week, I'm not as up on news as I usually am. Given where I am in getting our semester ready over work.
They must have did something, because I read that the Hulk movie that was in phase 1 is going to be available mid-year next year on Disney Plus.
Oh, so that's good. Underrated movie, in my opinion. Not a great movie, but not too terrible.
Oh, I like this. Yeah, that was good. That was great.
Edward Norton.
Now, do you guys prefer Edward Norton or the one that completed?
No.
Ruffalo.
I can't see the Hulk as anybody but Ruffalo.
So you can't see Edward Norton with the group in Avengers?
Not now.
The way that they portrayed those characters are very, very different.
Right.
And just sort of the anxiety that Ruffalo brought to the character.
Yes.
Versus Norton, which was more of the that scientist kind of protesting against the danger of his own science. It's just very different, in my opinion.
I agree. I think Mark Ruffalo portrayed Bruce Banner far better than Edward Norton did. I mean, that to me is, conflicted, nervous, doesn't want to really have anything that's going to endanger the people around him. And the stuff between him and Black Widow was really like the key romantic element of the whole first three phases of this thing.
I don't want to go too far off topic, but just real quick, how long did it take y'all to get comfortable with the new Hulk? I mean, were y'all like, as soon as y'all heard he was going to do it,
I didn't really have any trepidation, because Mark Ruffalo is a terrific actor. And then you see him in that first scene with Black Widow when she comes to bring him in, and you're like, okay, this guy works.
Okay.
Like, I'm totally fine.
I don't think we were really that invested in Edward Norton as a character.
Right.
And so it was easy to transition out of, it's kind of like Rhodey, how from Iron Man, the first Iron Man, to where, Don Cheadle ends up as War Machine. The first guy, I forget his name, but
Terrence Howard.
Yeah, right. I mean, he was great, but it wasn't that hard of a transition to work away from him either.
Right. And that's where we're going to end our MCU talk, since we got tons of things
we didn't plan for it.
Yeah, I get it. But another trailer dropped, another one that was really highly anticipated. I'm gonna let Dave spend most of the time talking about this, because once again, Birds of Prey, the super long subtitle, Emancipation of Harley Quinn, blah 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 blah, is coming sooner than we think. It's less than a month away now. This trailer, lots of fun. Lots of fun.
Yeah, I think fun is the operative word. This trailer, it had a very Ocean's 8, Ocean's 11-ish sort of feel to it. They had, you know, you got to see, they actually listed the characters involved. You got to see a lot of Harley Quinn. You got to see the Black Canary. You got to see, you know, I forget everybody who's in this thing, but it just looks fun. There's even, they talk Bruce Wayne a little bit in there, talking about that dreamy yep. Wayne character. So foreshadowing a possible tie-in, like we mentioned the last time we talked about, I think it was the last episode, talking about potential tie-ins. It just looks like a fun trailer. You've got Black Mask, who's involved in this thing, Ewan McGregor. You get to see some of how things might possibly progress. It left me saying, okay, yeah, I'm definitely ready for this movie. Let's get to February 7th and see what comes of it.
By the way, Ewan McGregor just being like the kind of going full ham hock on it. Count me in. I love seeing him just dive in and chew up the scenery in those trailers.
Yeah, I agree. It was a lot of fun. I'm looking forward to it. I don't know, you know, what did Rick think of the trailer?
I know. Rick, ask us a bunch of off-topic questions about Birds of Prey. Come on.
Margot Robbie, I'm going.
Hot. Man. I mean, yes.
No, the first time I saw the trailer, because they had another trailer come out a while back.
Right.
I remember watching it, and I remember saying, I don't know about this. This is not going to. But when we spoke about it, I watched the new one, at least the ones you guys posted in the group. And I said, okay, this trailer piqued my interest a lot better than the other trailer. So when I put that together with what you guys were talking about, we're definitely going to go see it for sure.
Cool.
Margot Robbie.
So, feeling a little bit better about a couple of movies coming out in the early part of the year. And that's always an exciting thing. And as those trailers continue to drop, I think the trailer park will be a place that we continue visiting. So stay on top of them, fellas. If you see one that catches your eye, we want to make sure to cover them. We'll definitely try to cover the biggies as they hit. But yeah, good calls, good catches, and very, very excited.
Yeah, it looks like it'll be a fun movie, a good way to kick off whatever DC is doing this year. Assuming this is like a soft reset, then you know, we'll see. We'll see what happens. Like you said, Patrick, lots of fun with this trailer.
Lots of fun. And speaking of lots of fun, I'm going to talk about something that's not lots of fun. Because, fellas, we got to pay the bills. And we finally have commercials. So we can actually pay the bills with commercials, everybody. We're going to take a quick little break, put ourselves over, and give you a little commercial action before we come back to cover our top 80s sci-fi movies. Top 10. Let's do it.
Why should you visit TheChairShot.com? TheChairShot.com is your home for hard-hitting reviews, news, opinion, and analysis with attitude. Why? Because you're smarter than the average fan. TheChairShot.com. Always use your head.
All right, and welcome back to Bandwagon Nerds. It's time for the heart of the show, the meat of the order, if you will, to use a baseball analogy, as we do talk to sports, apparently. I learned this in the Bandwagon Nerds chat.
Go Nats.
Allegedly, we talk about sports.
Go Nats.
Every once in a while.
Tighten up, baby.
Or the foosball, if you will. You boys have been watching the foosball behind my back. But we're going to start the 80s project today. Last week, as you all recall, we decided we're going to start doing some countdowns. We're going to put together some personal lists for y'all. And because the 80s are this like rich era of film, at least according to one Dave Ungar, we are going to rattle off our top 10s movies of the 80s, but we decided to divide it up into genres to just kind of manage it. So hopefully we'll get some deep cuts out of these. I'm very excited to hear your guys' lists. But before we go into it, I wanted to just really quick, I already shared my list with everybody. So everybody on the podcast has seen my list.
And don't remember, but that's cool.
Right. But I'm hoping, because I saw Rick, I think he was cheating a little bit, trying to get the list up on his phone so he could see what I put on there. any movies on there when you saw that list, Rick, that you were like, what the hell is that? Because I'm willing to assume that Dave probably at least has heard of every movie that was on my list.
Definitely.
What was the question?
Wow.
I'm tweeting the show.
It's just like school. It's just like school.
I'm tweeting the show.
And this is why we give you the homework assignments. I said I shared the list. You in particular were the one who was like, can I have the list ahead of time? Can I have them early? Can I get them early? So, and I said, no.
I got them.
And so my question? The question was, did any of these, do you look at this and be like, what the hell is that?
I'm getting to your list now. Let's see. Know it. Oh, that's Dave's. Hold on. Let me get yours. did you email it to us?
Yeah. Oh my God, dude, I asked for your email account.
All right, I got it. Know it. Don't know it. So I'm five for ten.
7 out of 10, Rick.
Oh, my bad.
That's about what I figured. Because the bottom of my list is some deep cut stuff. And so the way we're going to do this, fellow basement dwellers, is we're going to take turns, starting at the bottom of our list, and kind of going through them one by one. Now, the caveat, and this is straight out of a suggestion from Dave, is if one of us names a movie at the bottom of our list that is higher up on somebody else's list, we're going to hold off talking about that movie until we get to it on the other person's list. So this is going to require some attention, Rick, as I can't see everybody else's list, because I'm going to need you to be like, hold up. Yeah, that's going to work. Be like, hold up. If you've got a film that's higher up, so that right. I think I can speak my mind
and let you know if something is higher up on my list.
Yeah, you jump on in. Feel free.
I've never interrupted the show before, but I'll start.
Okay. If I had Greg's little okay, I'd play it right there. But this group I have found can't just come up with a list of 10. And even I couldn't come up with a list of 10. I came up with a list of 11. So before we get into our lists and we start the rotation, figured we'd go around and we talk about our honorable mentions and just one sentence, which I know is going to be hard for you over there, Dave.
Yeah.
But one sentence about your honorable mentions, or you know, I'll give you two sentences at most.
That means Dave's going to take five. You should have stuck with one to get three.
I probably. As to why they need to check it out. I don't want to hear any nuanced about like cinematography or anything like that.
Just
lay that stuff out there. But we're going to start with the guy who probably looked at IMDb's Great Science movie all time. Rick, did you have any honorable mentions?
I did the list correctly. And me and my wife sat down. We went through multiple sites, looked at their top 25, their top 50. And I said, you know, I know a lot of these, but I said, I'm going to do it right. And I'm not going to put anything on my list that I have not seen. So with that being said, I have no honorable mentions because I just made the cut at 10 movies. So
and that was probably very, very difficult for you.
It really was. Yes.
Think of a 10th movie. He was like that 10th movie. What's the 10th movie going to be? So that's fair. Kind of what I think we expected, and I'm okay with that. You are the student. We are the teachers. So
I have heard of a lot of them, and I was like, it should be on the list, but I haven't seen it, so I can't put it on my list.
All righty. So, Dave, I'm going to set a timer.
All right. This will be quick. I could not decide between two honorable mentions. There are two that I just could not break a tie. One of them is 2010, the sequel to 2001, A Space Odyssey. I love the movie. It's great. The other one is The Final Countdown, which just briefly, it's USS Nimitz, a battleship in 1980, gets caught in some sort of storm and gets transported back in time to literally the day before Pearl Harbor. And they go through this whole thing. Should we intervene? Should we stop the attack? And that's kind of
What is this movie called?
It's called The Final Countdown.
I'm going to check it out.
Martin Sheen. He's in it. It's got a really good cast, special effects. All right. I'm not going to talk about cinematography, but
you're already breaking the damn rules.
But definitely worth checking out, man. A good alternate history sort of dabbling teasing alternate history.
I got to say, you said Martin Sheen, and I went, Martin Sheen, that's President Kennedy, you idiot. Well, he played Kennedy once. That's a different 80s movie. But my lone honorable mention was actually one I mentioned, I think, on the very first episode of this show, when we were talking about Disney Plus and the advent of Disney Plus. And the first movie that I watched on Disney Plus was 1986's Flight of the Navigator. And I, as a child, wore this movie out at the video store. I watched it so much. And it's a story about a boy growing up in, I think it's the 60s. And he gets separated from his parents on the way home during the 4th of July and stumbles into some sort of time warp because he is picked up by a spaceship that has been sent to Earth to study it. And he is not aged a day, but has gone missing for like a decade and is returned to his home at a time because he's not able to, they don't believe that humans will survive time travel. So they can't bring him back to the year that he took him away. And it's really just a fun like chase through Earth as he has all these star charts trapped in his head and, you know, kind of a man out of time story, but with a kid who can control a spaceship voiced by Paul Rubens, better known to all of you as Pee-wee Herman.
If I could say one thing about 2010 before we cut out here, it is not the acid trip that its predecessor was. So don't be scared by that little factoid.
Right. So those are honorable mentions, movies that just didn't quite make the cut for us. We're going to jump right into our top 10 list. We're going to do this in a rotation. We're going to do it rotisserie style as if we're doing a fantasy football draft. So the order is going to be Dave, Rick, Patrick, and then Patrick, Rick, Dave, and so on. And so, Dave, you get to regale us with your number 10 right off the bat. What do you got for us, man?
My number 10 best sci-fi movie of the 80s is The Thing. The redo of the first off, anybody got this anywhere later on their list?
No, sir.
Okay. So The Thing, the redo of the classic horror movie from, I don't know when, the 60s, 50s? I don't know what it was. But man,
been remade multiple times. Yeah.
Yeah. This thing had Kurt Russell in it. I mean, it was fantastic. I mean, scary, just intense, just got in your head. You were on the edge of your seat the entire time. It's a sci-fi horror sort of thing. It is one of those crossovers, but from a sci-fi standpoint, absolutely love this movie. Definitely the best sci-fi horror movie of the 80s. So The Thing gets number 10 on my list.
See, and that's the thing, the reason why I kept it off my list is because I view it more as a horror film than a science fiction film.
I
think that's good. I think that's going to be a challenge for us in a lot of these, because looking at my list, some of the movies that I have listed on my list are comedies as much as they are science fiction stuff. And so it's really about where you kind of take it. The special effects work and the puppetry done in that movie. And this is John Carpenter at his height of his powers. Just the horror genius that was John Carpenter in the 80s is something that is not to be overlooked. And this is one of his absolute best films.
And that music in the background where something's going to go wrong and and it's just this, it's not a cinematic, orchestral piece of magnificence like Star Wars or something, but it's almost Jaws-like and just that sort of monotonous in your head, shit's about to go down because this crap's playing in the background, done very well. I mean,
evil Wilford Brimley, by the way.
Yes.
That's all, the bad guy being Wilford Brimley, Mr. Diabetes himself. Spokesperson.
And it ends so hopelessly, at the end. There in the middle of nowhere. It's just like, fuck, you're screwed,
it's like,
dude.
Like that scene in Click. Everything ends on such a downer, man. That's what life is, just a big series of downers.
Yeah.
All right. So Rick, what was your number 10?
My number 10 was E.T. And I know y'all have that higher up.
Very much so. We're going to pause on E.T. Very, very nice. My number 10 is a movie that definitely could have fit as a comedy. Robert Urich's 1984 classic, The Ice Pirates. Just a band of misfits. Don't be thumbed down. What are you thumbs down?
I don't have it on my list.
That's what he means.
That's unfortunate because I actually looked for a way to see if you could find a way to see it. This movie's just over the top ridiculous. These ice pirates are, they steal water from evil overlords to then give to the poor to help survive. And there's a princess involved. There's a time warp involved at one point where they travel through a time thing. And as they're being chased by these robots and progressively going through the ship, everybody is aging all the way up until they nearly die of old age. It's a great, great, fun, fun movie. And was number 10 on my list.
You know what that sounds like, Pat? I mean, this doesn't make our list, but did you ever see Time Bandits 81?
Oh yeah, totally Time Bandits. I almost put Time Bandits on there.
Sounds a lot like that.
I watched Ice Pirates way more than I watched Time Bandits, which is awesome. which is why Ice Pirates made the list.
Awesome.
And that's the thing, is the bottom of my list, and this, it's, dear listeners, to be clear, these are our lists. These are our choices. So if you're getting all indignant because Ice Pirates wasn't a very good movie, suck a big one, because this is my list and Ice Pirates is number 10.
Yeah, get your own podcast.
My number 9 movie is an even more bonkers film. And if you haven't seen it, take a moment to find it. And this, Rick, is why I asked you if you had Amazon Prime earlier in the week. Because this movie, The Adventures of Buckaroo Banzai Across the Eighth Dimension in 1984, I don't even know how to describe this film other than it's an alien invasion film with John Lithgow as the lead evil alien of these invaders. You've got a who's who cast of people who would be famous eventually. Jeff Goldblum is a cowboy. He's wearing these big, ridiculous, furry chaps with a red shirt and a 7-gallon hat, and it is outstanding. Outstanding stuff.
That's on your list, right, Rick?
No.
Okay.
It needs to be on a list.
It's go ahead, Rick. You want to do your number 9?
Yeah, I'm not going to be able to describe in depth the way y'all are with your movies until we get to probably 3. But Cocoon, the movie.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, yeah. Is that an 80s movie? Okay.
That is. Yeah, 85.
Okay.
And it, I don't know. I enjoyed it. I actually went back and watched a few minutes of it.
Hell yeah.
After we made this list. So my mom used to watch it all the time with me as a kid. So
it's a great movie.
Steve Guttenberg.
Yeah, and Chris Courtney Cox. I mean, she was great in that whole thing.
Also, Wilford Brimley.
Wilford Brimley, nice Wilford Brimley. Good, helpful
Wilford Brimley.
Directed by Ron Howard too. So.
Uh-huh. Yep. Jessica Tandy's in that movie. There's a lot of really good.
Calm
actors.
Down, Patrick.
Who's that?
Jessica Tandy.
No, I said calm down. You got excited when you said that name.
Brian Dennehy. He's the main guy.
Right. Yep.
Yep.
My number 9, I don't know if it's on anybody else's list. I don't remember, but, it's The Abyss. On anybody else's list. Oh man, this movie, love this movie. I know it was on Tunney's list. I saw his, but, The Abyss is just, it's about a race of alien civilization at literally the bottom of the ocean. And it's about, there's an oil rig down there. They're in trouble. A nuke's been dropped down there. They're trying to disable the nuke. You got a husband and his ex-wife together. They're rekindling their romance. And it's just, they've got some, for the time, the special effects with the water effect of the creatures involved. You hadn't seen that done before. It's just got it all. It's got high drama. It's got a good story. It's got, you know, the romantic element. This couple coming back together.
That's James Cameron, right?
I think it is.
Because I do believe that some of the special effects are a predecessor to a certain sequel from the early 90s.
Yes.
That kind of revolutionized things, that Terminator.
This is one movie my wife said has to be on your list. And I said, I didn't see it. So she was upset.
James Cameron. Oh, it's one you definitely should see, Rick. It's excellent.
All right, Rick. So we're back to you.
Number 8, The Terminator.
Okay, so that is later on my list.
Yes, I figured it would be. All right.
So my number 8 is, again, probably the last of the 3 movies that Rick hasn't seen or heard of, I hope, is a 1984 science fiction comedy called My Science Project. I literally just watched this movie yesterday after putting the list together and getting nostalgic about it. Again, completely ridiculous movie. Dennis Hopper plays a science teacher in this thing, and he is a hippie science teacher from the 60s who doesn't like any like authority, calls the cops pigs. It was this 80s teen comedy sort of deal about a guy, and I can't remember his name, but he was in the Stephen King horror movie Christine. He played one of the main characters in Christine, and they actually make a joke about it in the movie. But and the guy who played Steve Guttenberg's buddy in the movie Short Circuit, I can't remember the actor's name off the top of my head, but this kid is a musclehead, works on cars all the time, desperately needs a science project to graduate high school. So he breaks into a military base to steal this gizmo, and they just call it the gizmo. And again, he starts fiddling with it, hooks it up to a power source, and it opens up a time vortex over the high school. And the big climactic scene is him with his buddies trying to walk their way through this time warp as through this high school to shut this machine off and rescue the girl that is the love interest and all that stuff. Completely ridiculous 80s comedy schlock. Lots of fun science fiction elements to it as well.
Got to check that out.
You definitely need to. I don't know if it's available anywhere, but I love it. It's a terrible movie. Gonna just lay it out. Terrible, very 80s. You'll feel it all.
That was your number eight?
That was my number eight. We're moving into number seven.
I got to give you my eight first.
Oh, is it? No, it's not. Rotisserie, man.
I didn't give my number eight, though.
Then you forgot to go twice.
Did I?
That's what happened. Yes, that's what happened.
Damn it.
So give us your number eight.
Well, I know mine comes in later on Patrick's list, but it's Flash Gordon, so we don't have to discuss it now.
All right, we'll get there. My number seven. Now we're back on track. So number seven for me, 1984's movie The Last Starfighter. Again, a movie that I watched, and upon reflection, in 1984, really ahead of its time in terms of special effects. First movie that I can really recall outside of maybe Tron that used a lot of computer generated imagery to do space battles. About a teenager who scores really high on a video game, stars Robert Preston. I didn't even ask, is this on anybody else's list? This is just me.
No,
I assume. But watch it with your kids. If you have kids, my son, after watching that movie yesterday, the little O'Dowd was like, I want to be a starfighter. And that's all you need to know out of a good sci-fi space action movie. Fun soundtrack as well. Rick, to you for number seven.
Number seven. And I didn't realize how big Jeff Goldblum was in the 80s.
Huge.
Until I started looking at these lists. It's The Fly.
Oh, yeah.
There you go. Another sci-fi horror. Yeah.
I can't describe it in detail like you guys, but I remember watching it growing up and with my mom. And my mom just loved these type of movies. And I just remember every time it came as a kid, even in my teens, I just sat down and I finished watching the movie.
Most people remember the vomit scene. Yeah. That's the big one.
Yes.
Brundlefly.
He vomits up his food as Brundlefly to eat his food.
Such a sad movie. I mean, just tragic to the very end.
Yeah. So that was my number seven.
Dave. My number seven, Dave. I'm guessing, is later on somebody's list, but it's Aliens.
It's online.
Later on Rick's. All right. So
you're number six.
My number six?
Yep.
My number six, it came in earlier on Rick's list. I don't know if it's on Patrick's list, but it's The Terminator.
I left The Terminator off.
Oh, my goodness. I mean, I think most people generally regard T2 as a superior movie for good reason. But this did set the stage for everything. And there's so much of it that carried over into modern pop culture. You know, the whole concept of, I mean, how many times this movie was the first one I can think of that gave us a story where the machines achieve sentience and in a matter of microseconds decides the fate of humanity. These fuckers are a threat. Let's get rid of them. You know, how many spinoffs have we seen from that? The whole Matrix universe is based off of the same general concept. This movie did it. You know, the whole concept of time travel, Sarah Connor, you know, the twist that, you know, the guy who gets sent back in time for one night stand, basically, although it's much deeper than that. But I mean, what a mind fuck. I'm going to send my father back in time to help my mother so that I can be born and we can save humanity. Screw that. I mean, it's just so well done.
And you talk about iconic music too.
Yes.
The Terminator music, that just that drum beat in the background, because that existed for movie one and two.
Yeah, Kenny Omega can thank the Terminator for his entire shit that goes on in the ring.
There's our wrestling reference for the week.
We made it almost an hour.
Yeah.
Well, and to defend myself, since there was a shock and all about why we don't put this stuff out here. Again, for me, these are the movies that I probably default to watch more than any others when it comes to this genre and this time period. And I love the Terminator. I don't watch it very often. I enjoy it when I do, but when I'm like, I'm in the mood for X, Y, and Z, these are the movies I pull out.
That's fair enough. Rick, you got any comments about the Terminator?
No, a classic movie, man, but I'm with T2 is a lot better, but you said exactly what I was thinking. Set the stage for so much.
So, all right, you got a number six for us, Rick?
I do. Number six. It's a comedy. Something I can just pop in, or I own it on Vudu. It's Spaceballs. The Mel Brooks movie.
Yes.
I just, anything Mel Brooks, if it's available, I'm sitting down and I'm watching it. And I got into Spaceballs more than I did Star Wars, surprisingly. So, but I love the movie, man. Just the humor. I love 80s humor. And I figured because it was sci-fi, I'm throwing it in my list.
Such a quotable movie. Just a quotable movie.
Yep.
We've combed the whole desert. We ain't found shit.
Shit.
You think we're being too literal, sir? No, he said to comb the desert. We're combing the desert.
So that was my number six.
If I walk, the movie will be over. Anyway, yeah, that and the Mel Brooks, again, another person that when he was at his peak, all of those movies are so quotable. And then he made Dracula Dead and loving it, and we never forgave him.
What? Dude, that's if we did a top 10 comedy of all time, it would be in my top 10.
Dracula Dead and Loving It would be in your top 10 comedy of all time.
I fucking love that movie, dude. I love it.
Dave, what's PC Tunney's number? Can we get it? So my number six, as it was mentioned, was Dave's number eight. For me, is Flash Gordon. And 1980, so it makes it right in there, right after the Star Wars craze. And we've talked about Flash Gordon. I've tried to make Rick watch Flash Gordon. Did you spend the $8, Rick? Spend the $8 and check out.
Rick, give me your PayPal account. I will send you the money right now.
I'll send you my PayPal account.
Anyway, talk about a movie where the soundtrack makes the movie as much as the movie itself, which, again, over the top, old school sci-fi feel. But that Queen soundtrack is banger. Those battle scenes, the space battles at the end, when you've just got the guitar riff in the background, you got Brian May just rocking his axe. Awesome. Awesome stuff. Your thought was you're great.
Dude, we had the intro memorized when we were kids, you know, Clytus on board. What plaything can you offer me today? And, you know, you can just go off on, you know, that whole thing. It's so good. It's so cheesy, but it's so good. I mean,
Max von Sydow as Ming the Merciless.
That's right. I mean, the Queen soundtrack. What's that?
Paul plays Dr. What's his name? The guy from Fiddler on the Roof.
Oh, amazing. He plays Professor Zarkov. That's right. Yeah.
Yes.
He's got that. You met Timothy Dalton's the Baron. The shit in the tree.
Yes.
That thing in the tree, right. Man, where you hold your
little like stinger deal.
Yeah.
Like,
and you're like, you know.
And that scene was really well done.
Oh, it's so well
really
done.
Intense. It's so intense.
Send me on my way. Spare me the madness. You know, that sort of. It's so good. I mean, I feel bad that Rick hasn't seen it.
Well, we've made our way into our top five. So, Dave, lay it on us. Is it me? It's me. My number five. And I don't know if it's on anybody's list because I haven't seen it, but I got Back to the Future at number five.
Yeah, it's higher on mine.
It's higher on mine as well.
All right. Well, then we'll move over to Rick. Rick, what's your number five?
There are three movies growing up that I broke the VHS because I watched them so much. It was Batman. It was my number two. And it was also my number five. It was RoboCop. I just wore RoboCop out. I couldn't get enough RoboCop. I was RoboCop for Halloween. I had RoboCop everything. I love the movie RoboCop. So that's my number five.
Can you believe Peter Weller has now made our lists in two different movies? Because he was also in Buckaroo Banzai.
He's got to get an MVP for that.
I know. Hell yeah. Him and Wilford Brimley.
So, sorry, Dave, you're number five.
My number five is, I don't know if it's on anybody else's list, but for me, it's Return of the Jedi at number five.
That's Patrick, by the way, if you're wondering who's making that sound.
How do you not like this movie? I mean, I understand it's not it's not the first two, but I mean, it was just...
Here's the thing. I don't like Jedi now. I loved Jedi as a kid.
Right.
I did. And I loved, and I still like, if you were to have me rank them, it'd be in the mid to upper half of the Star Wars films. But the Ewoks were supposed to be Wookiees, man. We were supposed to get Wookiees earlier. We got teddy bears.
I understand that part, but I mean, there's good stuff. I mean, the way that they cap this story off, everything that you don't like about Rise of Skywalker, Patrick, or that you didn't like about Revenge of the Sith, really can't complain about that with Jedi, because you did get a satisfying ending to the original trilogy. You got Darth Vader who finds, you know, redemption, the whole thing with the father and the son, discovering that Leia is Luke's sister, which of course raises some issues from the first movie, but that's beside the point. It just you have the Emperor, you get another Death Star, you get Lando Calrissian flying the Falcon. I mean, it's not Empire and it's probably not New Hope, but I mean, as far as sci-fi in the 80s goes, yeah, that's got to be number five for me. You guys, you can disagree all you want, but like you said, Patrick, now, it's my list.
I will say this about Return of the Jedi. I think that Return of the Jedi's sense of closure is why I resent this new trilogy that Abrams made, because it feels like a trilogy that didn't need to be made based on the trilogy that had just closed. It didn't forge a new path, and that's really what would have been a better thing. Yeah. Jedi is fine. I'll tell you know what's weird is the little things that bug me about Jedi that have, you know, of all the tinkering that George Lucas does with his own product, the things that bother me, he still hasn't fixed. For example, Darth Vader's voice is different sounding in Return of the Jedi. R2-D2's beeps and clicks are different in Return of the Jedi, radically different, and don't make him sound like R2-D2. And I'm like, you're a lie. It's weird how that's where my fandom has taken me.
It is weird.
Yeah, I gotta agree with Rick. That is kind of strange, but you know,
it's weird that y'all like Star Wars as much. But anyway,
what
I mean, it's only the greatest space opera of all time.
Yeah, Rick.
Okay.
Damn,
weird.
Dan Wagoner, right. You know.
So we're on up to number four now, right?
Dave's number four.
Dave's number four. All
did
right.
You guys
do
your
five?
You guys did your fives. Okay. My number four, I know for a fact, is higher on Patrick's list, and it's Star Trek II, The Wrath of Khan. So we will yield at this point.
My number four is Aliens.
There you go. Okay, that was my number seven.
Then you go ahead and talk about it. I just love the movie Aliens. Oh, I can watch that anytime.
Space Marines, man.
Yeah, there's so much about Aliens. They took and the first movie was so good. I mean, with the most iconic chest rupturing scene in film history.
Yes.
And then you get Aliens, which just basically took everything the first one did so well and ratchets it up to 10,000.
But it's not a horror movie the way that Alien was. That was the thing that was so great about that movie.
Right. It was clearly a sci-fi sort of thing. And you know, you get the idea of just the scope and the danger that these aliens possess, these parasitic creatures possessed. And, you know, just Sigourney Weaver just becomes the archetypal badass, feminine badass, you know, for what?
Right.
I mean, that went on. She was like, I was looking at her like, okay, matching people up next to her for the next 10 years, the next decade, the whole stay away from her, you bitch, and all that stuff. I mean,
right. I found so interesting about Ripley is the way that they change. Again, you talk about changing the character.
Right.
She's much more, she's hard edge and no nonsense in Alien. And they softened her and made her more maternal in Aliens. With, you know, having her look after Newt, which was always just an interesting take, but yet they didn't take away from her ability to be amazing. Like Newt didn't kill her as a character in a way that it could have by trying to soften her up. The other thing I love about Alien, and this is, again, we want to talk about heralded actors from the 80s. A guy, and I'm going to pronounce his last name wrong, his name is Michael, I think it's Bain, B-I-E-H-N, plays the colonel or the corporal, the other surviving Marine with her at the end.
Dude, that's also his third appearance on this list.
Yeah, because he's also Kyle Reese.
And he's in The Abyss.
And I didn't know he's in The Abyss. I forgot he was in The Abyss. So he's in a lot of movies like that. He was in The Rock. He dies really quickly in The Rock.
Okay.
He's in Tombstone. Ringo. He's Johnny Ringo in Tombstone. He's this great character actor that just kind of plays like a tough badass dude that ultimately dies. Sean Bean before Sean Bean became Sean Bean.
Bill Paxton is in this, isn't he?
Yes, he is.
He's Hudson.
Game over, man. Yeah. Game over.
I don't know if you're keeping track, but we just got our asses kicked, pal. You know? Yep. It's so good.
It's a Paul Reiser is the little shitty weasel, like corporate guy.
Yep.
Oh, great, great stuff. That was Rick, right? That was you that gave.
That was my number four.
Number four was from 1987, and that is the Arnold Schwarzenegger classic Predator.
Okay. This is higher on my list. So
it's all right, higher on mine. We're going to pause on that one, and I'll go to my number three, which was, I think, Rick's number eight or so, and that's E.T. Now, I don't know if E.T. is E.T. on your list at all, Dave?
I struggled. That's like my Terminator from your list, the one I struggled to keep off, but ultimately decided to.
So I want, and here's the other thing, is I went back and forth as to whether to have E.T. on this list or on next week's list, because there's an element of fantasy to E.T. as well. But, Niagara Falls, man. When E.T. is telling Elliot to be good and hops on that spaceship. I love that movie so much that when this commercial came out this year by Comcast or whatever, I was pissed. I was pissed that they cheapened that movie so much. I was pissed at everybody involved with making that deal happen. I was pissed at the actor who played Elliot for coming back. All of it pissed me off because it was such a great movie about, you know, a bond and friendship and, you know, spoke to kids. It was so well done. And, you know, again, Spielberg at the height of his powers, it's always emotional for me. And now when I watch, and it changes again, you want to talk about movies that change meanings when you have children, watching that movie with my son, I couldn't do it. Like I couldn't have him look at me because I was so emotional about that movie. Love E.T. so much.
I don't feel as strong about it as you do, but you know.
Of course, it was number eight on your list.
It was number 10. But anyway,
made your list.
Yes. My number three. We're number three, right?
Right.
Predator.
Yep, that's where I've got it.
All right, Arnold Schwarzenegger, Jesse Ventura, Carl Weathers. I can watch that movie. If I had to do a top 10 all time, it would be in my top 10. I love that movie. Me and my dad, that's one of the memories I have with my dad is watching that movie. And every time it came on, it would just, we'd just sit there and watch it. A lot of memories from that movie. So number three.
Great movie. Kicked off another massive franchise. Franchises that crossed over with the Aliens franchise, although those movies aren't nearly as good. But, the first Predator was, just everything. Arnold was just the man in that thing. Carl Weathers was great. Casting, you talk about casting. That was, Jesse the Body Ventura was great in that whole thing. It's got everything. The whole self-destruction, the whole Arnold, he couldn't see me. You know, did it's that this alien, the way that he sees things, it's not visually like we do. He sees heat signatures and infrared. Yep. And I thought they really, and just because you think, you just watch this thing mow through everybody in his path. And you're like, how in the hell is Arnold going to get anywhere with this thing? And then right when you think it's as hopeless as it can get, then they give you this unexpected, there's this weakness, you know, that sort of thing. So, yeah, Predators, obviously, it's number three on my list, too. It's one of Arnold's got a few appearances on here now, too.
Right, and number four on mine. So obviously, right up there in the same place for all of that. And I don't know that there's anything I can add that can trump that. So a joint number three. That's the first, you know, agreed upon number three amongst any of us. So that puts us at our number twos.
Dave.
My number two, I don't know if it's higher on anybody else's list because there's not much to go from here, but a little bit higher up, but it's Back to the Future.
It's higher on mine.
It's higher on Rick's. All right. I guess we'll wait then. We will have to wait.
Now we're pausing. So we know what Rick's number one is.
Yeah.
That's what we just learned there. All right. So, Rick, what's your number two?
My number two is one of the three cassette tapes that I broke. And I went around for years in my childhood thinking I was He-Man, Master of the Universe.
Wow. The movie that bankrupted Canon Films.
I couldn't get enough of this. I mean, I had the whole getup, the costume, the swords. I would just, I was He-Man for years as a child.
So here's the thing.
Again,
it's Rick's list.
This is our list.
Right. But judgment-free zone here, because I freaking loved He-Man as a kid. Like, I watched the cartoon. I made my parents take me to that movie. I remember the after credits tag, which was an unusual thing back in the 80s to have an after credits tag when Frank Langella's head pops up out of the water and promises he'll be back. I was young enough and dumb enough to be like, well, when's the next He-Man movie coming? Because Skeletor's not defeated. Not knowing that that movie was run by a production company. And there's a fascinating documentary out there if you can find it. The title of it eludes me, but it's about Canon Films, the company that had the rights to that. They also made the worst Superman movie of all time, Superman 4.
Yeah.
But they ran out of money. And their budget was so low that was the reason that most of the movie is filmed in New York City or wherever it is. And that the final set pieces, the big climax, is literally just a soundstage with bad lighting because they didn't have any money for a set. But Dolph Lundgren as He-Man, I mean, that's perfect casting at that time.
I looked it up and it only got a 17% and it lost $5 million.
Yeah, it bankrupted that. That was it for Canon Films.
That's all right.
They pinned all their hopes on that movie too. It was crazy how that happened. So I think my number two is probably Dave's number one. So I'm just going to say it and then we'll get to it when we get back to Dave on the number ones. Because mine was Star Wars Episode V, The Empire Strikes Back.
Yep, it's my number one. Doesn't even appear on Rick's list, you bastard.
Is the best of the Star Wars movies. We'll wax poetic about that in a second. But my number one, which is Dave's number like three, is that what it was or something like that?
I don't know. My number four.
Number four, Star Trek II, The Wrath of Khan. And again, at this point in our list, I think we're just splitting hairs and Rick smiling and shuffling around tells me he's never seen The Wrath of Khan.
I hope he's heard of it.
You've heard of it though, right?
Heard of what? No.
You've never heard of Star Trek II, The Wrath of Khan?
I've heard of Star Trek, but remember that it has a series, not as a movie.
Oh, my God. So.
Bandwagoner.
I just don't even know. Hey. That just made your homework assignment is to fucking watch Wrath of Khan.
No, don't do that to me.
No, man. You have to do this. This movie is, I mean, you've watched Empire Strikes Back, right?
Not in one sitting.
Oh, Jesus Christ. Anyway, Star Trek II Wrath of Khan, in my opinion, and I think a lot of others and a lot of people would agree who grew up during this era when these Star Trek movies were coming up, in my opinion, is the best Star Trek movie ever made. Ricardo Montalban reprising a role from the old series in the 1960s as this member of a race of people who are genetically superior but pretty evil. They try to overtake the Enterprise and Kirk exiles him and his people on a planet that later on in the future is damaged and destroyed via, I think a planet next to him exploding. You know, the plots elude me, but basically on this desert planet, and it shows you who the kind of actor William Shatner could be. Really, like, people make fun of Shatner as a parody of himself, but William Shatner, Leonard Nimoy, DeForest Kelly, that whole cast is just amazing. It has the death of Spock in there. that, you know, springboards into some sequels, and you know, has the infamous, you know, Kirk yelling into the con that, you know, gets made fun of now, but at the time it was just a terrific movie, the way that that character pulls the strings. Ricardo Montalban is just amazing in that movie. So, you know, I don't care that he had a fake chest plate to make himself look more muscular and fit. It's so good. It was everything that I could have hoped for out of a science fiction movie, and has that element of, you know, they always talk about the higher brow thinking of Star Trek, had that, but also added its elements of action to keep people there to watch it. Yeah. Just a great, great film. Love it to death.
Khan's such an iconic character. They brought him back in the new series. You know, he's brought back and then what I liked, I mean, I agree, the best Star Trek movie ever made. I did like what they did in the second Star Trek of this one, Edge of Darkness or something like that.
Yeah, something like that.
You know, the way they kind of flipped it with Kirk being the one who dies temporarily as opposed to Spock. I thought that was done really well. But yeah, I mean, yes. The scene where this movie's got the ultimate good versus evil paradigm going on. You've got Khan, who's just, you know, they thought they sent him to City Alpha 6, but they sent him to City Alpha 5, then City Alpha 6 explodes. And does all this shit, and then he's just hell bent on revenge because Kirk inadvertently killed his wife and all this stuff.
Admiral Kirk,
you know, and I mean, it's just great. And then they introduce
the little desert creatures.
Oh, they put in their ears.
Fuck. Oh,
yeah.
There's body horror. Like, that's the thing, is that movie had so much in it. Like, it had body horror. It had classic good versus evil, good old fashioned sci-fi stuff. The Spock's funeral.
Yeah,
Spock's funeral, we shoot him out there. Oh, it's so good. And Shatner,
yeah,
for as much as people make fun of Shatner and call him a parody of himself, yeah, so amazing.
When he says, "Of all the souls I've met in my travels, his was the most, and his voice cracks right when he says human. Yeah, I mean, Jesus, you if you don't watch that, it's not ET levels of tears, but if you don't watch that and get choked up a little bit, then there's, you know, then you're either a bandwagoner like Rick and has never seen it, or there's something really wrong with you.
That movie is special in my, I mean, obviously it's my number one, but it's special.
I agree. Absolutely. My number one, of course, Empire Strikes Back.
Did Rick give his number one?
I know what
we all know.
We know what Rick's number one is. You want to talk Back to the Future first? What do you want to talk
about?
Well, first?
We follow the draft order. It's Rick's turn in the draft order.
Go ahead, Rick.
So Rick,
my number one, because I think, if I had to do a top 10 of my greatest all time, Back to the Future 2 would be in my top 5. So would Back to the Future. But I packaged Back to the Future 1 and 2 is my number one. I just, there's something about that movie. It makes me, it's just a great movie. I love Back to the Future. And I don't know what else to say about it.
Dude,
it's great acting.
Think about how important that movie is. That movie set a standard for how all time travel is looked at in subsequent movies.
But we find
to the point, Endgame's take on it is different.
It's complete shit. That's in right. 2019, but
that's their opinion. According to Marvel, it is.
The reason why that line
hits you so hard is because we've been trained to think Back to the Future provided the template. You cannot run into yourself in the past or you fuck everything up. You know, you got to make sure that you protect the timelines, skewed timelines, alternate realities. I mean, what other movie? And it's so funny. I mean, the movie's so funny and fun.
It
but
is.
What other movie out there can you think that really set a template for all time travel, with the exception of like Somewhere in Time or something like that, which is all basically in your brain, that sort of thing. But I mean, like, yeah, Back to the Future set something that just, I mean, it's like, wow. It's amazing.
I mean, you know, you look at some of the older movies that existed prior to the 80s, and you had things like The Time Machine, you know, Orson Welles and that sort of stuff. But no, you're right. Or H.G. Wells, not Orson Welles. Shame on me. And that's the thing is, like, that to me, that's the first movie I really remember involving time travel that gave you rules of time travel. Like, this is what you have to expect will happen. And it's been parodied. It's been, you know, homaged, it's been talked about, it's been duplicated. So great. I love Back to the Future. Like, it's in my top 5. So there's absolutely nothing wrong with Back to the Future being a number one movie.
I got it number 2.
They just type of impact. My stepson is 19 and I joke with him, if you ever go back in time, what's one thing you would do? And he would say, I'm not going to find my current self. I'll tell you that
much. You don't do that. You just don't do that.
It just, like Dave said, it made it fun. Right. You got Hugo Lewis and the soundtrack.
Rick,
I mean, everything
Rick,
about
you're
it
not just thinking fourth dimensionally, you know?
Do you mean to tell me you made a time machine
out of a DeLorean? I figure if you're going to make a time machine, do it with style, you know?
This is heavy, Doc. This is heavy.
And the thing is, like, when what year did they go to in the future? 2016 or 2015, right?
Yeah, it's now past.
And the Cubs win the World Series, and then a year later, they actually do it for real.
A year later, they win it, yeah.
Right. So. All right, well, we've come to our last number one. It's one that's on two lists, inexplicably not on a list, but whatever. Let's talk a little Empire Strikes Back, Dave. It's your number one, so you go first.
I'm not going to spend a lot of time because I know we're running well over our hour for once.
Greg will get over
it. That's right. It's our show.
Is that why we have to stick to an hour because of Greg?
No, it's just it's easier for us in our lives.
Yeah, exactly. Okay. I
might have a Saints game to catch. We don't know.
Not till next season. Sorry, Rick.
I'll record till September, man. I'm good.
Except Monday.
I can't record Monday.
What do you want to say about Empire? Just that my opinion, the greatest sci-fi movie ever, not just of the 80s, but ever. It's got just, you know, they took everything from Star Wars and they added so many different little elements to it and just broadened. I mean, no movie has ever broadened a universe as much as this one did, with the biggest shock moment and probably one of the biggest shock moments in cinematic history. If you watched it in 1980, to sit there in a theater and have Darth Vader say, "No, I am your father." And you're like, "Wait, what the hell just happened?" I was like 12 years old and it just still fried my, it did probably permanent brain damage more than the drugs did, but that's another story.
Now I gotta admit, I was 2, so I don't remember the same way you do.
I know. But for me, I was 12. And I mean, I just walked out of there looking at my mom like, Darth Vader's Luke's father. How does that even work? And I mean, it had the AT-ATs were introduced in that whole thing. You've got Yoda gets introduced. I mean, but for Empire Strikes Back, we're not talking Mandalorian every week because there is no baby Yoda. You got Boba Fett. You get to see some more of just how badass Darth is. You start pulling for Luke. You start developing that emotional attachment to Luke. And then it ends with, the whole, I love you, I know. I've got a picture frame downstairs that says the same thing. You go to Disneyland, Rick. When you walk around Disneyland, you will see hundreds of people, couples, with one of them's wearing a shirt that says, I love you, and the other one's wearing the shirt that says, I know. Now, you've never seen the movie, but you got to see that. I mean, that
in one sitting, he did say he's seen like parts of it. Yeah. Don't bury him.
I'm not going to bury
over
him.
Over that.
Thank you.
You bury him over Star Trek 2. Okay. That's where you bury him.
But there's so much about that movie that just, it's got everything, man.
I think,
can I just say real quick? Just to cut it, the Texans are beating the Chiefs 14-0.
I figured.
No way. Yes. That figures. The AFC is just all blown up.
Yeah. Houston, Tennessee, AFC championship game. I think I'm just going to go with it. That's going to suck.
Anyway, it's not going to suck. It's going to suck, but it's not going to suck. Empire is the movie where Star Wars grew up. You know what I mean? Like, and that's the thing that I really remember out of that. And the thing that I take away from that movie now is you look at just sort of the epic fantasy and imagination and joy and fun of Star Wars. And it transitions into this very dark adult themed film with some memorable, wonderful characters. You mentioned Yoda. As a kid, I remember every time it snowed, I would play in the yard like I was on a Tauntaun riding around trying to find the probe droid. Like that movie, definitely had an imprint on me. The big revelation, huge imprint on me. Probably what's interesting, when you look at movies, they get me emotional and where they get me emotional. When Yoda pulls the X-Wing out of the swamp, every time, and he talks about that's why, and Luke sits down and is like, I don't believe it. That's why you failed. Like that, for some reason, that's the moment for me that gets me every time. I'm like, I love it. Like, I know, you said, I love you, I know. But Yeah, for me, it's that training sequence and watching Luke and that development, knowing that he's going into something that he's not ready for, and it comes true that he's not ready for it when he finally arrives to it. So, absolutely, you know, a number one. And if I could do a one and a 1A, that would be how I would have done it, because they really are, you know, in terms of my two, you know, sci-fi films, those are the tops. But what I thought I would do for today's poll, when this drops on Tuesday, is that we'd take our top threes or our top ones. Like, each of us has a different number one, and that's going to be the poll, the bandwagon nerd poll.
That's a tough
for this
choice.
Week. And let some folks do some choosing.
Empire versus Wrath of Khan versus Back to the Future. That's a tough one.
That's a heck of a poll right there, fellas. What do you think?
I think you're going to be surprised, my brother.
I think it'll be close. I think it might be one of our more even polls. At least I hope. You know, and I don't think that any one of those movies is a slouch by any stretch of the imagination. Rick, I already gave you your homework assignment. At some point, it doesn't have to be by next week, but at some point, we're going to get you to watch Wrath of Khan.
I'm off Tuesday to cure a hangover from LSU's game Monday. So I think I'll knock it out.
I hope for your sake they don't lose, Rick. That's all I got to say.
Right. But next week's genre, next week's top 10, and this may be a little bit harder, but next week's top 10, we are a pop culture thing. We focus on the science fiction and the fantasy stuff a little bit more first. So we hit the science fiction. Next week, your top 10 fantasy films of the 80s. And not the naughty kind, okay, fellas? I don't know.
I'm about to say, Rick, I got 10 already.
Rick going to Dirty Town. Ain't
naughty films?
No naughty films. No naughty films. This is an adult show, but not that adult of a show.
21 to nothing, Texans, Rick.
Jesus Christ.
Lord. Yeah.
So
in the first quarter.
Playoffs going exactly how everyone expected.
Oh, yes.
Somebody asked me who I think's going to the Super Bowl. I said, dude, this is the worst playoff year I've had picking. You don't want to know anything right. That I have to say. So
here we are. And the way I wanted to end the show, so next week we'll do our top 10 fantasy films. I think that'll be a lot of fun. Different genres, different looks. And again, hoping to get some deep cuts out there, see if there's stuff that we can encourage all of you to watch, maybe even revisit. But basically, just see if we can get Rick to watch it. That's kind of the challenge.
Oh, I already found my number one. Okay.
Of course you did.
It was your number two from this list.
I think looking at this list, it's probably going to be my 1 through 10. So,
but I wanted to end the show. The last little thing we wanted to talk about, as everybody knows at this point, it's been a week. News broke earlier in the weekend that we lost arguably the greatest rock drummer of all time in Neil Peart, drummer Rush, who's apparently quietly battling cancer, brain cancer, for a year and a half before finally succumbing. And I thought, before we do like where to find everybody, I thought we'd just talk a little bit, anything that you want, just one thing about Neil Peart that kind of stood out for you. I'll go first. For me, I always talk about when I worked at the University of Massachusetts as a hall director, which means I worked in a dorm with college students. I was listening to Rush during the big drum solo instrumental piece of Tom Sawyer. And three of my students were like, "What the hell is this?" And I was like, "It's motherfucking Rush." And that's how I've always described it. The one, I have a greatest hit CD that a friend made for me once of Rush music that he didn't title Rush Greatest Hits. He titled it Motherfucking Rush. And the reason that I give that moniker is because of the drums in Neil Peart. And Geddy Lee's voice is distinct all of its own. And, you know, that band is just an amazing group of musical virtuosos. But for me, it's always been about the drums. It's always been about the way Peart plays. And music lost somebody special this past week.
Go ahead, Rick.
Yeah. The first time I was young, man, my dad listened to all that music growing up. And that's what I learned. And that's what I listen to still today. But I remember my dad's white Chevy pickup truck bringing me to daycare. And I just heard my dad played drums growing up. So I was very familiar with music. And I just said, what is this? And he turned it up. He said, just listen to this. And it was a drum solo. And I said, what is this? He said, Rush. Neil made me a Rush fan because of his drum solos. And I'm so glad I heard it that day. It not only arguably the greatest drummer, but one of the greatest bands from their era. And I'm just a huge Rush fan because of Neil. And it was sad, and it took me by surprise when I saw this, man. So it hurts a little bit, but I've got all their music. I've got every song they've ever released on my iPod, and I'm just a big Rush fan. It was sad to hear.
Well, man, at the age of 51, they probably mean something different to me than even to Patrick, because, I mean, I grew up with Rush. When I first started getting into rock music, Rush was one of those. I mean, I can remember like six iconic bands starting off when I first started listening, and Rush was one of them. And I mean, I think later on in life, I found a lot of solace by, you know, when I was going through my second divorce, that sort of thing, when I let, you know, divorced my kid's mom, who's just a pain in the ass, but that's another story. But
she is a listener.
Yeah.
Thank you for the support.
No, not my present wife, my second one.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Kayleen, no. Kayleen's great. My second wife, pain in the ass.
He was also a listener.
You know, I kind of lost my identity with that whole situation. Yeah, exactly. That whole situation. And then I remember listening to Rush again and going on these long rides on the bike path, just listening to Rush while I was out there and starting to repair, you know, kind of reconnect with myself and reading Neil's book. I mean, Neil had a very tragic final quarter of his life. You know, his daughter, Selena, I think was her name, died in a car accident in Toronto. 6 months later, his wife succumbed to cancer. And Neil just basically got on his motorcycle and rode everywhere. And he wrote a book called Ghost Rider, which when I read through it, it actually healed me, because I'm like, Jesus, nothing I'm going through is remotely close to what this guy's describing right now. And he's still doing this. And then, you know, Rush comes back. They go on a hiatus for like 4 years, and they come back with the Vapor Trails record. And I mean, yeah, it wasn't just Neil's drumming is second to none, but his lyrics Rush's lyrics are so good, they teach them in English classes and stuff like that, to teach kids, here's how you do poetry, here's how you write songs, here's how you do lyrics. And, you know, yeah, very fantasy-based for sure. Ayn Rand had a huge influence on the band. But, yeah, it's shocking. It's sad that a guy like Neil Peart is gone. I mean, 67 is a little bit young to lose somebody like him.
Yeah,
but
too young, man.
But it's it's horribly tragic. I mean, I they're one of my they're like my number one or number two favorite bands of all time. So sure. Yeah, when you lose somebody like that, and then the finality of it is like, well, they're not going to ever tour again. Then it kind of starts to creep in and hit you a little bit. But it sucks.
Totally
right. Sucks.
And you just can't replace that.
No,
that piece. You know, and I consider myself lucky. Because Queen is my favorite band of all time. And, you know, and Freddie's passing. Queen is not Queen without Freddie Mercury.
Correct.
But I think it's really interesting because I've seen them twice now with Adam Lambert. And it's still a great show. And I never got to see Freddie perform live. I was too young when he passed away. It was, you know, in the early 90s. But that band and that sound and what's generated really until Brian May goes – can still be what it is. You can't be Rush without Neil Peart.
Right.
Or if I were to equate it to a band that I did listen to a lot, Metallica, you can't be Metallica without James Hetfield's voice. Or Lars's shitty drumming. For as much as I like Metallica, his drumming is trash. So real quick before we do the wrap on the show, your favorite Rush song, once around the table, Dave. If you had to pick one, what's your go-to?
Oh man, you know, I actually love the song Digital Man off Subdivisions.
Yep.
That's like, it's like Rush meets the Police, but they do the Police better than the Police probably do the Police. Sort of thing. And I love the Police too, but that song Digital Man is just one of those songs that stands out to me, jumps out to me. It's not one of the more well-known ones. But that's probably the one that I would look at and say, I want to hear that right now.
Rick, what about you?
Spirit of the Radio or Tom Sawyer, man. Just the opening of right. Tom Sawyer and just the drum solo. I know it's so popular and so just to say Tom Sawyer, but it really is a great
song. I mean, it's an iconic song. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. And yeah, so.
So for me, it's Free Will. I love and that's another one, that opening guitar riff to that song just puts you in the right place. I love it. So we're going to put a wrap on the show. We mentioned something offhandedly, but I think we should announce it officially. We finally have a Twitter account for the podcast, everybody. And you know, we're talking about putting up a poll at Bandwagon Nerds, not a Twitter handle that existed. So we claimed it. It's ours. Give us a follow on Twitter, please. We need to bump that up. It should hit 500 followers before I hit 500 followers, or we're doing something wrong, fellas. That's all I got to say.
Well, remember what Patrick said in the very beginning. The amount of followers that follows this page will also be added to Patrick's followers on his personal page.
And yet, I still looking at the numbers. Let's take a look real quick on
458. He's gaining one every week, right?
Wait, no, mine says 456.
Oh, lost one. Damn it.
Way to go, Dave.
I'll follow you back, so, Patrick.
Oh, thank you. You can get me back on. Stop blocking me. So yeah, for me, if you want to follow me on Twitter, I am at Wrestling Realist. That is WrestlingRealist. You can listen to me, of course, on this podcast every Tuesday, as well as on Wednesdays on the Greg DeMarco Show, when I talk a little bit of wrestling, which we actually did for the first time in a long time on this past Wednesday show. We actually talked about what was going on with the current product. That was very exciting.
Yeah, they've been a little bit quiet for a couple of weeks, but
Greg kept doing all these like experimental, like I want to try these like game shows and shit. Like I was just like, okay, man, you do you.
You're a bad influence on him, I think.
After I saw the results, and or should I say heard the results of the game show, I think I'd want to bail too, Patrick.
Yeah, it wasn't a good day for me. The game was rigged against me. That's all I got to say.
I agree. Just like the t-shirt game.
You go with Minnesota wrestling and you don't have Nick Bockwinkle as an answer to one of the questions. You should just go fuck yourself. That's all I'm saying, DeMarco. Ooh. You heard it here. Shots fired.
I agree.
Oof. Dave, Rick, tell everybody where they can find you guys.
Well, you can find me at Attitude Ag. That is at Attitude AGG. And I will reiterate what Patrick said. Make sure you are following us at Bandwagon Nerds. Poll of the day, even though this poll got screwed up too. I was supposed to see Big Bad. You know, it says Bug Bad. God damn you, autofill's terrible. That's
Dave is never doing the poll question again. That's what I just saw there.
Jesus Christ.
Well, if you think that's bad, don't let me do it. So.
Remember, hate tweets to at, go ahead, Rick.
At the Big Rick 62 on Twitter. Three more shows left of the Weekly Blitz, and then we're done until September. So all of my attention, fellas, will be on this show and getting my homework assignments done for the show.
You'll be celebrating LSU victories for quite a while, Rick.
Oh, boy.
Maybe.
Man, it's going to be rough if Clemson pulls it off.
Yeah, it will be.
Do you actually want to give your Twitter handle now, Dave, or are you recovered? Did you?
I did. At Attitude AGG.
You did. It was the hate tweets. That's right. It was the hate tweets. So
you can send hate tweets to at Attitude Ag as well. That works.
Right. So that's going to do it for us tonight today on Bandwagon Nerds. We're going to take you out with a little bit of music from the guy we were just remembering, a little bit of Neil Peart. Thank you, everyone, as always, for listening. And we'll see you next week. Climb out of the basement. Until then, we'll see you.
So long, guys.
Later.